schedule is missing. We start by one. Those that watch the meeting to confirm that we've lost two members of this committee. But at least lost them in a good way, because they have been promoted. Honorable Memezi. has been appointed to chair the Portfolio Committee on Public Works. So she's no longer a member of this committee. Honorable Mganga Sabashe, who was the whip of this committee, has been appointed to chair the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise. So we have two members that have left, but also I think the good thing for this committee, because it also says this is a super committee that actually produces leadership of this parliament. Yeah. I think we should take it in that positive spirit. So in that, at the moment we have been joined by Honorable Volmaran. Honorable Volmaran is from the Northwest. He has not been confirmed to be a member of this committee yet. I'm still negotiating. He's an alternate member, but he's here today. We hope that they will confirm him to be a member permanent. We're still waiting for the other member that then they will bring to us. And we don't have a whip yet. The whip will be appointed in the next 2 weeks. So I thought it's important just to start there. Number two, the secretary of the committee, Koliswa Fasia, has lost her mother-in-law. So she is not at work this week. They are appearing this weekend. So we have Mr. Babalo Skwela next to me, who is then standing in for Koliswa today. The content advisor of the committee, Osabelo Mnguni, couldn't be in the meeting today. We all know that he's getting married in December. The fiance has just had a car accident. So he couldn't come. So that's what is happening. This committee is is a lot of activities going on. But that is it may, I thought let's accept those apologies as they are, and then we move on. Are they accepted? Thanks, Honorable Chairman. We had, when we were interacting with the process of the PRRR, we took a decision that housing development agency must come back and do an in-depth presentation on certain areas that we couldn't discuss them in detail at that particular time, because there were other entities that had to present. Today, we're giving them all the time. So they are here today to present to us. We said to them, we want to come back and present the full details on the catalytic project. We said they must come back and present on their program and progress on the revitalization of the mining towns. And we also said they must come and present on the program that they are doing on the informal settlement. So they're here. But I'm going to allow the DG to just say a few words and then allow the HDA to present. Just by way of introduction, because it looks like it's a fairly new committee, because it's fairly new constructed. My name is Nokawe Mafu. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee on human settlement. I have not changed yet. I'm still here. So I'm here. Yes. So it's a very progressive committee, Honorable Williams. You are going to enjoy it. And I know that you will be the one that wants not to leave the committee. The committee that we don't doubt it, that people that come into contact with this committee learn a lot, and they change, both in terms of the cognitive thinking and how they behave politically. That's the committee. So we know you will enjoy it. Over to you, DG. The DG is Mr. Mbulelo Changane, Honorable William, in case you know the name but you've never seen him. He's wearing glasses. They are all the big people in human settlement are wearing glasses, by the way. Very few of them that don't wear glasses. I don't know whether it's a hard work, but all the men in human settlement wear glasses, including members. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. I guess all the men are aging slowly in human settlement. Chair, it's only proper that I hand over to my colleague, Nelly Chin, who was involved in the packaging of this presentation. Only coming back to work today. Neville was acting for the last 2 weeks. So I'm going to ask him to give us a little bit of introduction. But we are all here from the ministry side, as usual. We've got the support from Shazi and Sharon. And from HDA, we have the CEO of HDA here with us, Daphne, who's also an executive director at HDA. From the department, we have Johan Valis and Philip Chauke. They are very much involved in all of these programs. And on the far right, I don't know why Fanny is a backbencher, because he works very closely with the HDA officials on these programs. So the entire team chair is here, and we will be able to take questions. I'll ask Neville to lead us.
Thank you, Chair. No problem. Chair, what we have done is that we've prepared the three presentations as requested. Chair, the catalytic projects together with the revitalization of the mining town is co-managed with the Housing Development Agency, so Mr. Molloy and his team will do the presentation on the catalytic projects, the progress together with the revitalization of the distressed mining towns. And then the updated on the upgrading of informal settlements will be led by Mr. Wallace, who is the program manager for the project, and the HDA does also undertake that process within the mining town. Chair, just to indicate an apology from Mr. Leshabane, who is the DDG responsible for program and project management. Due to the schedule, they had scheduled a urgent meeting with a workshop, in fact, with the Department of Mineral Resources to discuss the revitalization of mining towns. So, Chair, with your permission, then I'll ask Mr. Molloy to lead us on the catalytic projects and also the revitalization of the mining towns. Thank you.
Morning, Chair, morning, honorables and colleagues. As I've been introduced, my name is Pascal Molloy. I'm the CEO of the HDA. Chair, I suppose we want to take them one by one, maybe have a presentation on the catalytic projects and then open up for questions. just on the catalytic projects, we thought it might be useful. This is a screenshot from a tool and dashboard that we use in our own offices to monitor. And Yeah, but I found it useful, and it's not in your pack, but I thought maybe it's just a useful overview on our project management plan. As you would know that we are responsible for program managing all the catalytic projects, and I must add quickly, and mega projects in the case of Gauteng. So if you look at the black bubbles, there's 48 that's been approved by MINMEC, as we sit now. Of those 48, in this year's business plans across all the 9 provinces, there are 28 projects that have been reflected. To date, remember that the catalytic projects didn't start with the announcement. It didn't start with the program in 2014. Some of them are projects that were pushing further than where they are now. If you look at Savannah City, for instance, it's been there for the last 8 years. If you look at the Entune Gateway, it's been there for the last 12 years or so. So we took stock of what has been delivered to date since the inception. So to date, we have 23,001 units. And we're using units as a module. Remember that catalytic projects are not just about a house. They are also include roads, electricity, water, sanitation, and all. But if you're using just the unit as a measure of how far we've gone, there's 23,001 on the ground as we speak. Of those, if you look at what's been planned for this year, there's 8,000. So we hope that by the end of March, there'll be 8,870. If you take what's on the business plans and what's projected for the 31st of March, there'll be 8,870. Let me just quickly add here that of that 8,000, the bulk will be coming out of the 10 mega projects that we are counting for accounting for in Gauteng. Now, we've categorized the projects into three categories. There are those that are still at a conceptual stage, and we call them category A. Those are proposed, they pass the special planning requirements, they pass all the tests to qualify as catalytic projects. But they haven't gone into an advanced stage of planning, and we call them category A. So of the total that we're dealing with, 9 of those are at that stage. We have 18 that have gone through planning. And if you look at the list of planning, you'll see further down in the presentation. We list everything that we consider as planning, including geotags, including all your development planning requirements that are listed. So there's 18 of those. We have 31 running projects at the moment across the country. But of the 18, the next number there is 8. We have 8 now that were recommended to move from category B to category C. So to move from planning to implementation, which will bring the total number of projects, running projects, that will subject to your scrutiny from time to time, that will be in our quarterly reviews and reports from time to time. We'll be sitting with 89 projects. Of the 48, 10 municipalities have draft IPs signed, and of the provinces, we have 6 draft IPs. DG will always insist that until such time that we've got MOAs, which are political agreements signed, our IPs would not be able to move forward. I thought maybe it's just useful to keep those numbers. We'll make the slide available, Chair. So it was an afterthought on my side to say that it's useful maybe to have that oversight. That you keep it with you every time we report. You can hold us to these numbers. The MOUs I spoke about, and this is just a rough indication of which province and which municipalities or which projects have signed implementation protocols. Let me just repeat that it's critical now that we have the political MOA signed to complete our intergovernmental relations contract. Now, this is a breakdown just in terms of housing opportunities and potential opportunities and total project cost. This includes everything. So when you look at the housing opportunities, it includes also, I mean, the project cost includes other non-housing costs. We've broken the HDA in the way we operate into three regions. Region A covers all the Capes, east, west, and north. Region B covers Gauteng, Limpopo, and northwest. Region C covers Mpumalanga, Mpumalanga, the Free State, and KZN. And we've broken down those costs. You might, if you look at those costs, see that in some instances we have fewer units at a particular cost, and in some instances the cost is less, but we have more units. I think the topographies and the bulk requirements would differ from province to province. Region C would have the second largest budget with 233 housing units. But if you look at Region B, which includes the Northern Cape, the bulk costs could be higher in the Northern Cape, but there might be fewer units for obvious reasons. I'm sure you understand the distances and the cost of the food in bulk for a few units in the Northern Cape. So that bottom line illustration tries to capture that point. These are the estimated housing opportunities across the different provinces. I'm colorblind, so I'm sure if your hard copy is there, you'll be able to trace what housing opportunities are allocated to which province. And these are potential job opportunities, again, kind of coded to match what's in each province. This is just an explanation of the categorization that I was talking about. Category A, maybe just to say, these are concept inception projects. They are catalytic status. There's land, ownership that's been verified. There will be a budget for land acquisition that's available. And there will be some extent of land transfers. And in some instances, there will be disagreement. The biggest area of concentration that we have to carry out before we can start implementation are those that are at planning stages under Category B. So a project would have to pass all those requirements and compliance requirements before we can put the first brick or the first slab on the ground. So if you go back to those numbers, 18 of those and 8 of which we are happy to propose for implementation are contained under Category B. The rest, the 39, are now already at implementation stage. We give then a breakdown by province on where the projects are and what they are. The categorization will be also included there. 21,000, most of it will be your PNG or RDP houses. We broke down also that they were made with the target for Western bulk water and Western bulk sewer and Amalinga, and give the budget and indicate the source of funding. Let me say, Chair, upfront that at this stage, we haven't been able to confirm sources of funding from other grants, from the non-human settlement grant sources. So we don't have your INAPs here, we don't have your RBICs yet, we don't have your grants coming, we don't even reflect MIG at this stage. So most of the sources of HSDG funding that we are responsible for. And that's the same throughout all the projects to date. So I won't go through them in detail, they're there, we'll entertain questions. Northern Cape is three, Gauteng is the largest, we've got 15, but we also, as I said, are responsible for an additional 10 that have been approved as mega projects by the province of Gauteng. What we're reflecting here are the 15 as part of the 48 that has been approved by MINMEC. Two in Limpopo, Northwest two. We already are on the ground in Matswazane with the N12 project there, and pushing. Bokamoso, I think it's still sitting at the Category B. Most of the KwaZulu-Natal ones either category A or B, and there's only one C, but you have Waterstone, for instance, in Mpanzi. Phase one there would already be there at the implementation stage. The other phases would be at the conceptual stage, and the others might be at planning stages. That's why we have Waterstone and Mpanzi there. Indicating all classifications as an A, B, and C. Free State, there's three, and Mpumalanga, only Clarinet. That's still at conceptual stage, but I think advanced conceptual, it could be at planning stages fairly soon. We then hope technology works, Chair, that this is the type of information that we require, Chair, that's very difficult for us to package. We can try so many ways, but we thought maybe it might be useful just to indicate the amount of detail that we have. We have broken it down per province. The screen seems like it needs adjustment there. So my glasses seems a bit hazy. So per province, we'll have an indication. I think the projector. The projector is out of focus.
Okay.
I'll just take a few examples for the chair. You have Algoa Park, and it will be a category A project, and it will indicate on top there that there's housing needs assessment done. It will say land identification and assessment, yes, it's done. Geotech, no, there are no geotech reports. Do you have any done socioeconomic studies? Yes. Project conception plan? Yes. And then the NOSE will say that we still have to do a preliminary environmental study. We still need to do an assessment of bulk requirements. We still need to do preliminary service layouts. And we still need to do land acquisition. We still have to confirm land acquisition. So if you go down the list, it will tell you as a committee that this is the project and this is the extent that it's at, and using all of those variables to determine readiness. If you look at the same province, or the Western Cape, if you wanted to go back to the Eastern Cape, Duncan Village would be a category A, okay. But it would, I mean, it's a category B, is that planning stage? And what do you mean by planning? Do you have your geotech done? Do you have your environmental approvals? No. Do you have your WULA approvals? These are water usage licenses. Is town planning been done? But we do have a township establishment. We do have services and designs not approved, and we'll give you the reasons for some of these areas that are not met, and also give you a sense of progress in terms of how we move these non-achievables into achievables. Then the running projects in the same region, which is region A, which you remember covers the Capes, we have these projects that are running at the moment. And to measure what's running in terms of the HSDG, we look at the number of completed foundations, number of actual wall plates, number of actual roofed projects at 90%, and what practical completions we expect, and what are the actual completions that we expect. And we do that per project. So in the Eastern Cape province under Region A, those are the projects that are on the ground and that are running at the moment. If you slide across, it will tell you exactly what the budget is. And if there are deviations, it will give you the reasons for deviation. And it will also indicate
to you what interventions are required going forward. So that's the pattern right through. If you go to Region B, which is largely Gauteng, with two projects in the northwest and two projects in Limpopo, you will get the same categorization as well. What's at consumption level in Region A, Syfontein in Gauteng, is at that level where we still have to do housing needs, and we look at land identification, we look at geotechs, and we look at socioeconomic studies and so on. Those that are in planning are also listed there, where WULA requirements are there, like in Hickney in the south, Adion South. It will again go through all your environmental approvals, your WULA approvals, and those types of details. Maybe lastly, if you go to those that are at the planning stages in Region C, it would include Greater Amaoti, it would include Hyde Park, and the same requirements on top with the same type of reasons for deviations and interventions that might be required. This is the amount of detail that we have per project, per province, and categorized into A, B, or C. I think, Chair, yes, the rest of the information you have in front of you and the spreadsheets are what we have as details. Can I pause here and see if we have questions or input on the catalyst?
Thank you very much, that's the presentation on the catalytic project. I know that there is some information that you presented that you don't have in the disposal, which I'm hoping that at some point you will make available to yourself. Questions, clarities? Honourable members, maybe whilst you are thinking about the session, maybe CEO, if you can just in the first page of your presentation you. Talking about the three regions, Region A, Region B, and Region C. Just for information for honourable members, can you maybe say who is responsible for each region at the HDA hierarchy?
We have three regional heads. The Region A, there's Mr. Bosco Khoza, who's our regional head there. Then we have Nomsam Lodra, who's our regional head for Region C, which is KZN and Free State and Mpumalanga. And for Region B, we have Mr. Rakhwade, I nearly said Rax. We have Lucian Rakhwade, who's responsible for the Bobo Gauteng and Limpopo. Underneath them, for each and every province, we have a provincial manager. And we have provincial offices in all but three provinces. We still have to establish an office in Mpumalanga. We could understand that we establish offices as we ramp up. So at the moment, it doesn't really make sense for us to have an office when we're just running one project. But we still run other support services in the provinces. We still need to establish an office in the northwest. In Bobo, we are in the process of establishing, but the rest of the other provinces, we have offices. And in an office, we'd have then your project management capacity there to do the actual project management, working either with partners or working with developers or municipalities, as the case might be.
Thank you very much, honorable members. That's the presentation. Can I see him for questions of clarity and special? Honorable Frank, do you have your hand is up, followed by Honorable Soli, followed by Honorable Bang, in that order.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Can the CEO also please repeat the names of the regional heads? It was really fast. My second question, Chair, is those slides that are not here, I'm very interested, especially on the project in natural science. Because we're there as a committee in our website. And then I just wanted to check how far the process is. But the thing is that I can't have a very answer question because I don't have that information because the slide is not there. And also, I just wanted to check how did they organize or deal with the issue of the unintended problems in many municipalities and also the issue of the traditional leaders. Where there's a land for the traditional leaders, how do you deal with those problems in different areas, in different provinces in municipalities? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Use this one.
That I'll be last.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'm just more curious about, you know, the source of funding, and the CEO did indicate that it's actually a bit difficult to establish, you know, the other sources of funding from India, because throughout the presentation, the indication is that it's mostly sourced from HDSG and USDG. And secondly is, what's noteworthy for me, for instance, is with the breakdown of projects in the Eastern Cape, there's the N2 nodal development, you know, with the projected budget there running into something close like 19 billion. But for the 2017-2018 financial year, there's no allocation in there of any funding in there. And I just want to establish, how does that then impact, you know, on your delivery cycle? Given obviously the magnitude of the project vis-a-vis what's needed and the time frames that, you know, this project needs to be delivered within, because all of those correlate, because, you know, the lack of allocation this year affects that there will be little if no movement at all on that project. And also, again, if you can elaborate more in terms of, I see there's several of them with very high figures that are on planning phase. Just in terms of, you know, the annual target of delivery across all the projects, you know, rather than bare project, because then we'll have again a sense of, you know, the level of delivery from the HDS side on the entire catalytic projects in a financial cycle rather than through individual projects, so that again we can begin to measure how as a program that delivers in its entirety. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Soli. Honorable Pat? Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I want to appreciate the presentation, except that there are a lot of gaps, especially when it came to the Eastern Cape, which we wanted to get some information about. You are talking about job opportunities. What does that entail? Job opportunities for who? Is it for the contractors, people, or for the department, or for who? You say, how do you handle a situation when you don't have a complete presentation, like you say there are some areas where there are no geotechs, reports and things, do you proceed all the same, and how does that impact on your delivery? Also, how do you handle the areas where there are land claims? Have you encountered that, and how have you handled those, and where are those hurdles? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable. I'm Mukwanya. Maybe before you respond, CEO and the team, just a few questions from myself. One, you have implementation protocols that have been signed vis-a-vis the memorandum of understanding. And my own understanding is that from yourself, the implementation protocols is more to do with the administration side, you know, management. And the memorandum of understanding would mean those signed with the political principles. And I just wanted to have an understanding of how many of those have been done in terms of the MOUs per se. I know the IPs would be easy to do because that's the job that we do. But I wanted to have a sense on the MOUs, because that is going to explain to us how much of these projects have had acceptance from the political principles and therefore support in terms of what's going on. So I would like you to probably explain that a bit. Number two, when I look at the projects, there's a lot, a bulk of them, the category C, are in Gauteng and in Limpopo. Now, my question is going to be like this. When we were discussing the quarter one report of the department, these two provinces are the ones that did very badly in terms of performance. Now, yet you have a magnitude of category C projects by HDA, which category C are at the, they are the ones that are being implemented. So maybe I just want to have a sense of what challenges therefore, because from where I'm sitting, these should be the two provinces that should be doing very well in terms of output of units. And yet these are the two provinces that are not doing well at all. I'm not sure if probably as we move on in the year, there is going to be improvement, but just so that we can have a sense, what challenges then are you having? Because look, for me, the good performance of HDA translates to a good performance of the department. And therefore, I just wanted to have that sense, so that we, as we move on, we start to appreciate the challenges that the HDA is experiencing. You yourself is saying, for this financial year, you project to deliver about 8,870 units, more or less, if I got the number right. Maybe it's going to be very important for us just to humor us, where are you now in that number? And therefore, do you see yourself meeting that target? If not, what would be the challenge? So that we, for us, everything else is just English. What we would want to see is what at the end of every project we see units being delivered. So for me, I'm very interested, therefore, to have a sense of that 8,870. Where are you and how far are you on that? My last question would be, look, mega projects, catalytic projects by nature would need a lot of skill and a lot of financial muscle. How do you navigate the fact that this project must actually deal with the issue of radical economic transformation, in the sense that it has, they have to benefit the previously disadvantaged, whether in terms of contracts or in terms of the people that benefit from them as workers and jobs. And therefore, that translates to the question that says, in your own understanding, are you comfortable enough to say these mega projects or catalytic projects, wherever they are they addressing the issue of skilling young people, the issue of making sure that young people are able to get, are we able to deal with the high unemployment of young people through these catalytic projects? Are you able to be comfortable and say women are getting empowered through this project? And thirdly, blacks in particular, are they benefiting from this collective project? Because if you are going to go the normal way, the people that are going to qualify are your big contractors, which have got the financial muscle, which are normally the ones that have always benefited in the past, which are white in nature. So I just want to have that understanding. Is this program, in any case, helping the sector, which is the human settlement sector, to deal with the issue of making sure that you are killing those that have not, and you are able to them to benefit? Thank you so much. Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Chair. The names, just go through that slowly. Region A, it's Mr. Bosco Khoza. Region B, it's Mr. Lucian Rakhwale. And Region C, it's Ms. Nomsa Mlojwa. Matosani, yes, Matosani is categorized as both a B and a C. There's still aspects of planning and land acquisition that need to be resolved. We fortunately have also subjected Matosani to a set of due diligences that includes legal, that includes technical, that includes looking at the institutions that are required to deliver there. We did a financial due diligence. And we also check those questions, I think, that the Chair is talking about as part of the potential to advance your transformation and empowerment projects, if I could call it that. So Matosane is Ryan. One of the legal due diligence risks that we had was around contracting. I'm happy to say that since your visit, the contracting issues have been sorted out. The contracting also was delaying progress in terms of the developer, the current developer, they're being able to carry out his functions, and us spending the transferred amounts and honoring some of the invoices. So we've gone through that. I think we are happy now that there is progress and that we've normalized, I think, all the contracting and other issues that were impacting negatively on the project. So Matosane is running, but there's still aspects of Matosane that still require further planning. Just generally on Andres, and whether dealing with the traditional leaders, those would be issues that either would prevent a project from moving from planning to implementation. I mean, on traditional, I mean, there's a lot of areas where we have to deal with traditional land, especially in the KZN. And negotiations and the land availability agreements and those types of agreements would really require interaction with the traditional authority in the area. So that's in the normal business of preparing a project for implementation. Even post-implementation, there would still be engagements and agreements with traditional authorities like we'd have with municipalities in terms of your project governance, in terms of your day-to-day project steering committee work and so forth. Maybe maybe just dealing with the question of land. Let me quickly deal with the question about land claims. Yes, we've come across, I think the best example would be the Alexandra project, which has to deal with claims. There are land claims that have been made in Alex, you know, in the history of Alexandra. And part of the solution, before we can get Alexandra the project that's been proposed off the ground, we'll have to go back and deal with the claimants and deal with those issues. We might not deal with them directly as the HDA or the department, but we'll say to the competent authorities that please help us deal with the particular matter for us to be able to roll out the potential of that project to be the type of sustainable human settlement project that we envisage. Sources of funding, yes, most of what we are accounting for now is what we know for sure and what's been committed. And what's been committed for now is what's on the business plans of the different provinces. And the figures that we're indicating here is what's been committed through the business plans, and they're mostly HSDG. We still have to get further commitments on the USDGs to manage most of the bulk. Indications are that with the current or the new budgets that we have, we still have to go back, check whether or not commitments have been made. We understand in the Western Cape there is some USDG appropriations or budgets that have been done, and they are not reflected now here. It's quite normal that in most cases, most projects would start or require bulk investments up front. And we carry most of the bulk through the HSDG as well. And that other departments will come in and kick in. On the plan, yes, if you look at our project implementation plans, we'd want to know from the Department of Education, when is it that a school will be built in a particular project? How much is it going to cost? Do they see it coming in the next MTF budget or in the next budget cycle? Or so we plan in that fashion, but it doesn't mean that planning for a school in 3 years will get the school now. But the global figures that we show you there would make assumptions and would make estimated costs on what a cost of a school would be. Is it a public school? Is it a private school? Is it the clinic? What type of clinic? What level of water usage? Most of them would say upfront that we need to unlock bulk water for the project to kick off. So we have estimates on those, but what we're reflecting here is what's on budget, and most of that is what's on budget in terms of the USDG based on what's on the business plans. And you know, those development is a good example. It's a number of phases. The one phase that's ready now is Baywater, okay, which is also part of a redevelopment of the N2. There's a crossover that Sunrise is being responsible for there, and we can start developing an N2 nodal at the moment. And the funding model there will have to take into account what Sunrise is doing, what contributions that they're making at the moment. So it's not at the moment because we haven't got to a point where all those are considered. But we can safely say that we have a funding model done for N2 nodal as well. Let me just say that of the 48, we have subjected at least 14 of those projects to that level of detail in terms of funding models, but they are not concluded at the moment. We didn't want to come to the committee and say that, yes, we're getting so much from transport, so much from without having confirmed that, and I think the DG will be assisting in getting those bilaterals and those discussions at the appropriate platforms with his colleagues at FOSAT or other levels. Jobs for who? It's a combination, ma'am. It's a combination that jobs that are created as a result of the construction phase itself. And it's not jobs for construction houses. It's jobs for constructing a road, for putting a sewer line, for putting a number of other infrastructure requirements, not just jobs for them. But there are also potential job opportunities. These are mixed development sites. There will be commercial sites, there will be industrial sites. So we calculate also that as a result of this project being implemented and the fact that we're going to have commercial and industrial sites established, how many people will be employed, if it's light industry or whatever that's going to be built in that. So the job is jobs for a whole section of people. Whether you break it down into other demographics, I'm not sure that we are capable of doing that now. But the job indications that are there are not just for construction, but are also for opportunities that might arise as a result of other forms of uses that will be there. Number of we have a school. The school will be built. It will create opportunities for teachers. A hospital will create X opportunities for nurses. So those are all calculated in the job in the job estimates that are there. Let me explain again the A, B, and C. It's definitely going to be impossible to conceive to put a project that's at the inception into implementation. If it takes us 10 years to move from implementation, I mean from conception to implementation, so be it. But all we're saying is that it has to be done. You have to be able to go through all the issues. You can't start building without any geotech report or geotech exercise that's been carried out. You can't continue without a water use license agreement being issued. You can't continue without all the land availability issues and acquisition and leases, etc. So we are not saying that we have to. I mean that we'll give up. That because phase two in Matlosane is still at conceptual stages, that we're not going to do it. Our role as program manager and as the department will be to make sure that it happens. And it happens in time, and it happens in a manner that unlocks the delivery of the program sooner rather than later. There will be other authorities and other people that are responsible for doing that. All we do as program managers is to ensure, facilitate that it happens, but also account to the minister and yourself about progress, whether it's happening or not, and if it's not happening, what sort of interventions are required, and work with the delivery partners across provinces and private to make sure that these matters get resolved. The IPs and MOAs, Chair, I think a few provinces, Free State, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, we have signatures at least that includes land claims. Yes, I spoke about land claims when I made the Alexandra example.
Don't do that.
The Alex example was dealing with the land claims question. Let's see if we have further questions. Chair, thanks. We have a couple of projects, I mean provinces. Gauteng, most of the IPs are ready as trusts. In the Free State, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, we have signatures also from the MEC and the mayors over and above the IPs. In the Northern Cape, it's mostly IPs that have been signed. And IPs are just really like the chair's administrative documents that are signed. I think the key point that Chair that you're making and that the DG also makes eloquently is that we can, with the DG and the other official sign IPs, but they will still remain loose intergovernmental contracts until they are signed politically by our political principle. I suppose the minister's attitude at the moment is that we need commitment. We need to show commitment, and she will attach her signature once those commitments have been made. And the DG's office is assisting in getting those commitments done. The Gauteng question, we have 15 catalytic projects. Up to now, it's a mixed bag, and I think maybe the DG and the DDG might assist here. That up to now, Gauteng has been reporting and tracking what I call legacy projects. Their mega projects are only kicking in, some of them now, and are beginning to be part of what they will account for going forward. If you take a number of examples that could use in Gauteng, but I don't think that and if you look at that global number, the 8,870, only 1,300 are as a result of the catalytic projects and part of the 48 as approved by MINDEC. The balance of 7,000 units come from mega projects in Gauteng. So we're now getting to a point where we report almost weekly, and we're part of a reporting instrument that the MEC and the HOD of Gauteng has created, where we are now beginning to account for units that come out of mega projects and catalytic projects. So we'll, that process and progress will be monitored, and regular feedback will be made to the department nationally, and ultimately, I think, to MINMET. So they're only kicking in now. Most of them have been going through the planning stages, etc. So let me say at implementation stages for both mega projects and catalytic projects, some of those are only kicking in now. So they can't be part of your historical reporting that you've been seeing in Gauteng. And Limpopo would be the same, more or less argument. What they've now tended to do is to look at the non-performing aspects of some of their legacy projects and beginning to divert funds to some of the catalytic projects that are ready for implementation, especially in the West Rand. If you look at Gauteng, there are five projects there that have been unblocked, dealt with all the planning issues, dealt with the beneficiary issues, dealt with the geotech issues, the woolers, etc. And between those five, I'm not sure, I can't break them down, but I know the numbers there. It's about 3,500 and 1,800. So it's 1,500 plus, so we can get 2,100 units in just those five if funds are allocated and continue. So those types of management considerations have been done from time to time. But I think in earnest, Gauteng can start accounting for mega projects and or catalytic projects going forward, and we can't look backwards. Chair, we have reported in the past on the minister's transformation and empowerment requirements, including women, youth, etc. What we've done now, and we still have to present this formally to the minister, was to formalize that and legalize it and code it and get the approval from the minister. We learned from Sandra that made an imposition of 40%, I think, requirement for black-owned companies, and it was not accompanied by a strong legal resolution or policy from the organization itself. So we're doing that, and we are completing it. But in there, we look at the questions of ownership, questions of suppliers, questions of youth empowerment, questions of women empowerment, set aside for military vets, set aside for training, and as we transact with the 48 going forward, we also do subject them to that type of scrutiny and check if there's a developer there, if there's a developer in Matlosane, is the Matlosane developer black, is he empowered, where does he get the supplies from, and then we retrofit those for some of the projects that we come across and there are already agreements with their suppliers or contractors or developers, and that exercise is ongoing. I'm not sure if my colleagues would like to add, but I'd want to rest there.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
for those responses. Any additions maybe from the HDA first before I come to the department? Yes, you are fine. DG Fanny, any additions there? DG Chauke? Because big guns, so they must talk. Yes, DG.
I'll add on two questions, Chair. The first one is the MOA and the IP. We treat the MOA as what we call the intergovernmental contracting arrangement. As you know, Chair, budgeting is a political process. It's not an administrative process. So the executive authorities of the three spheres of government have to commit the budget to this project. And then the accounting officers of the three spheres of government, including the HDA accounting office, can sign the implementation protocol. We derive the existence of the implementation protocol from the MOA, the Memorandum of Agreement. We always refer to it as the M3 agreement, that is the three executive authorities from the three spheres of government. We've targeted to get this done before the end of November. That's our target. All what we need to do is to call a special amendment for it to happen. It's already been circulated to all the affected executive authorities for them to discuss it with their legal departments, because it's a contracting document, so legal services from the various spheres of government have to look at it and advise us. So we think it's doable before the end of the year, and then it will help us to plan, sorry, before the end of November, and it will help us to plan for the next financial year. The other question, Chair, that you have asked, and I think the CEO responded to it, but I just want to add, is why is Gauteng and Limpopo not performing very well this year when they have a significant number of projects that are running? We've discussed this question with the MEC. I had a one-on-one with the MEC a fortnight ago. I'll give you one example. You have projects like Flare Off with a big developer with all the capacity to deliver more than 1,000 units per annum. And we ask, why is this project, which is also a mega project, a mega catalytic project, why is it not being prioritized? And there are other projects. Savannah City is a running project. South Hills, Riverside, Luffering. These are all projects that are running in Gauteng with big developers. And those developers have capacity. So the MEC has taken a decision to upscale on those projects. You'll see it when we come back here to present Gauteng's recovery plan. That we've targeted those projects that are running. We've targeted those projects that have big developers that have capacity to deliver at scale. And that's what we'll be doing to turn the picture around in Gauteng, because there is absolutely no reason why Gauteng cannot deliver and exceed its targets, because they do have the budget, they do have the capacity at the construction level. I think part of the problem was around decision making in Gauteng. Remember, Gauteng over the last 3 years has had more than 5 HODs, around 5 HODs, which slows down decision making. But we're very convinced that this year the picture has been turned around, and we will see that graph going up. My suspicion is that next year Gauteng will be struggling to manage its finances, because they have committed a lot of projects. So there will be a number of projects that are running, that will be running. It will be a construction site. Limpopo, Chair, we, together with HDA, we realized that in Limpopo they had a significant number of contractors. I think they had a panel of about, so they had 6 contractors. But those were small contractors. Those were contractors that were not able to deliver at scale. We met with the MEC again a month ago, and the MEC has asked us to interview and bring in contractors that can support the small ones. But we have to be careful about contracting there, because if a contractor is not performing, you have to manage that contractor out. In contracting terms, you have to manage performance. You don't come around and say, you're not performing, so we're now coming to help you. No, it doesn't work that way. So we're managing that process, and we think that it is manageable. There are projects in Limpopo that where contractors are on site. All the planning issues have been taken care of. We may make some changes in the culture in terms of the catalytic projects, but we have to consult MINEC consult the minister. For instance, the project Bendo. Bendo as a project is almost complete. It's almost done. It's been in the system for a very long time. So the MEC has hinted that we may need to replace that project, which is Bendo. Other projects, the Palale, I'm sure the CEO of HD is going to touch on them. Because the Palale is a mining town. The next presentation talks to mining town. I think we can upscale the is Musina now. We're still busy with packaging plans there. It's not a catalytic project yet, but the MEC wanted to replace Bendo with Musina because Bendo is almost complete. But all the processes will have to be followed for us to be able to replace Bendo with another catalytic project. I think, Chair, those were the two main questions. The last one, maybe I need to hint on this. Remember, these are mixed development projects, not your traditional RDP, sorry, Minister will kill me, BNG delivery. It's mixed development, which means you have bonded units, you have social housing units, you have GAP units, you have BNG units, you have CRUs. So in most of these projects, you have a mixed, you have mixed development. So, Chair, if you have that kind of mixed development, you have to perfect your funding mix. So there's public finance in it, in other words, there's HSDG and USDG, but there's also private finance or development finance from the DFIs like DVSA, PIC, and others. So perfecting that funding mix is a very time-consuming and tedious exercise. In fact, we wrote to National Treasury and submitted most of these projects. And National Treasury said, well, we can only support you once you have reached financial closure. And as you can see, most of these projects have not reached financial closure. In other words, it means that all the financial agreements, whether it's public financial agreements or private financial agreements, all the financial agreements have to be in place before Treasury can start saying, okay, we committed a certain amount to these projects, which is why HDA has stressed and spent a lot of time on financial due diligence. In most mixed projects, Chair, this is my parting shot, the most significant aspect of due diligence is financial due diligence, because you need to understand who's going to fund what. Some of the developers that own the land, they are bringing their own finance, they are valuing their own land, and they bringing their own equity into the project. So all of those agreements and all of those things have to be in place before we can reach financial closure. So I just thought that I need to add on those things. We put a lot of pressure on HDA to get all of these things done so that in the next financial year we don't come back to this this problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ. It becomes very clear that as we interact with the department on every quarter of its performance, we are going to have special mention of how HDA functions, so that we can be able to see the progress and how they impact on the overall performance of the department. It's going to be important that you are able to isolate and lift that up so that we can see that as the committee. But otherwise, thank you very much for this presentation. I don't think you realize how important this program is to the overall development of the country, because correctly implemented, it actually deals with a lot of things, one of them being the special development that we've always been talking about, and also the issue of the economic turnoff that can benefit the previous advantage. So it's a very critical project. So we will be monitoring this. But for me, uppermost is to see the impact of HDA in the provinces that are not performing well at this point in time. We always believe that if HDA performs well, and I repeat this, if HDA performs well, the department performs well, and we cannot underplay that. So thank you very much, CEO of HDA, for this presentation. We've been waiting for it for almost a year. It came at last, so we appreciate. We also realize that it's not a program that you can just come and present it. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. There's still outstanding issues that we still need. The outstanding slides, the members have requested them, so we need them. But remember, you are going to be a frequent visitor into the committee until we satisfy ourselves that your influence in these provinces is turning the tide. But thank you very much. We then move to the second presentation, which is the revitalization of the distressed mining towns. We have an interest in this program. I think before I even allow the presentation, it's important to remind colleagues that in his State of the Nation address, the President of the Republic is the one that lifted this item to be an area that we deal with in his 2014 State of the Nation address. And therefore, it's one of the critical areas that we would want to see progress on and be able to say there has been some progress in this term of office. So as you present, just remember that. We'll allow you to do that presentation now. And I know at some point there was an interministerial committee that was dealing with this issue. And I also know that it's an area that, if it's correctly managed, it can actually also make a serious improvement on the outputs of what the department needs to achieve. Over to you. Who's presenting?
I would present, under normal circumstances, I would have asked Daphne to present.
Yes.
But her voice is distressed.
Yes, I know. She had some surgery or something. So please don't abuse it.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe as a quick background, then we'll go through the problem statement. I think for the same reasons that you outlined, and then go through the approach and the processes. And we've got six delivery levers that we want to dwell a bit on. And talk about structure in our 2017-18. Just on the problem statement or policy statement, is that there are policy gaps in terms of how we deal with the mining towns that include I think the point was that there was no strategy at that time, and part of the output was to make sure that we have spatial transformation programs and strategies approved, and that we needed clarity on rehabilitation funds for distressed and abandoned infrastructure and communities. That demand-side issues that we had to look at, that includes looking at the poor living conditions and the high demand of housing in those areas, the lack of affordability and indebtedness of the miners. We can use examples about Marikani and other places, and limited access to funding instruments, either for the mining regions themselves, the mining towns. I think that if there's a distress or a drop in the economy, a decline in the economy, it affects mining towns. The institute your Section 168 issues, which then also affect the ability of miners to be able to afford getting into houses when their job security is threatened. On the supply side, there are huge bulk infrastructure problems and land assembly challenges. In most cases, land is owned by the mining houses themselves, but we're asking about the traditional land. I mean, in that Lawn Mill complex, we have three municipalities involved there, Bojanala, Madibeng, and Rustenburg, But in between those areas where potential cement can be built for that mining town, they are traditional. That's Bapu, I think Member Valmarans would know the area much better. But Khata is the other side towards Sun City, outside Bafokeng. But I think there's Bapu land also. Bamukhale. And the institutional constraints that we have to deal with around, I mean, different organs of government, different spheres of government, but also appropriate agreements that needed to be entered between government and the mining towns themselves. And by the way, also to remember that we talk about landing, labor-saving areas as well. So what has been the objectives? These were the 22 municipalities been identified. There are 23 distressed mining towns that we're talking about, covering 22 municipalities, and only in 6 provinces. In the 3 provinces that are not included here is KZN, Free State, Western Cape, and Northern Cape. Free State is, we've got projects in the Free State. So we'll get the list further down as we go. So our overall intention is to ensure that there are sustainable human settlements in those areas, and they become catalysts for driving spatial transformation in the mining towns. And we've got those couple of issues that we look at: integrated housing development. We look at the alignment of different forms of planning, from your spatial development frameworks in municipalities, their IDPs, and their social labor plans. We identify training gaps. We look for funding in the funding mixes that the DG spoke about earlier on. There will be instances where we want to match funding between private, the mining towns, private public funding, but there might be opportunities also to go out into the markets and raise capital. We need to identify and implement partnerships, especially between government, the mining companies, and the private sector. And we're looking at enhancing existing delivery capacity. So that broadly, then, those are the project objectives. We program management, there's development planning, we offer technical support, and we offer support to existing and future projects. I won't go through, these are your typical management approaches to any plan, for that matter, dealing with all those issues from planning, doing the diagnosis, defining the response, making sure that proper government governance frameworks are in place, and getting into implementation. I skip those quickly just maybe to spend some time on these 6 delivery outcomes. One is land, we have to deal with all the land assembly issues. Identification, acquisition, facilitating release where it's possible, and making sure that there's proactive engagement with partners on land release. And partners would include everyone, including traditional authorities as well. Again, using Marikana as an example, land assembly was a big issue there. There was some portion of land, about 50 million worth of land that was donated by Lonmin, but it didn't mean that we could do the development. Government had to come in, make sure that there's bulk, there's subsidies, and just to get the initial CRUs and the initial BNG houses that have been built around America. And then there's informal upgrading or catalytic responses, making sure that there are, that's the planning part B that I'll talk about, that there's planning feasibilities that are done, the upgrading plans, the projects readiness is determined, and that there's detailed planning and costing before we do project implementation. Then there's a requirement for infrastructure and capacity support, including bulk infrastructure. Some of the mines would say that they have had bulk for years, bulk sewer, bulk water, and we are in negotiation with them that if we have bulk, can we put that bulk into the project itself, and worry about doing the link as part of your project implementation. And some of them would argue that they have technical capacity. They are largely engineering companies. They might be focused on mining, but they might have engineers that they can make available for project management. Then there's planning and implementation, which gets to a point of making sure that the project management and implementation plans on the ground, and that we're able to report and subject ourselves to monitoring. We deal also, as I said, with land labor sending areas, and we need to have an in-depth analysis of trends. Where do people come from? I mean, some of the trends and the research that needs to be done, for instance, is that people are targeting X thousand employees of a particular mine, and you're going to be providing houses or housing loans through other mechanisms, either using their own housing allowances or leave-out allowances. How many of those would rather have their permanent homes in 10 years or 20 years at the place of employment, being the mine itself, or at the place of origin? And those analyses and trends, I think, are very important to consider when you do deal with the labor sending. The trend is that those that have been employed for a longer period and are older would tend to want to say that they want to go back home. But the younger ones and the newer employees tend to say that they want to take their families out of the labor sending areas and have them resident in the place of employment. The one example that we've been, case study that we've been looking at, I think the split is about 60-40. 60% of your current labor force in that particular mine is indicating a tendency or a preference to be accommodated at the place of employment rather than going back home. Then there are issues of partnerships and intergovernmental relations. Partnerships with the mines and intergovernmental relationships agreements between us as government players, the triple M's who kick in as well there, as well as implementation protocols. To look at then our implementation capacity and our requirement to act as program managers and coordination, and this is not just the HDA, I think this is ourselves and the department. We need to be operating across those four blocks, bring in the NASP program, bring in technical capacity to be able to deal with the urban settlement upgrading programs, deal with all the land assembly issues, and that's where the strength of the HDA has been over the years, looking at both legal and technical capacity, but bringing other technical capacities as well, including technical staff, program or project managers, town planners, engineers, quantity surveyors, structural engineers, and most of your civil and infrastructure engineering requirements, and ensure that we have technical capacity for implementation across all the provinces. We indicate that in Limpopo, there will be program management requirements, and engineers and development management and planners. We in Gauteng, almost the same, including development managers and planners. Northwest planners at the stage will be required. Free State program management and development management planners. Northern Cape program management engineers. And Mpumalanga, I'm not sure where Mpumalanga is planned, but I think Mpumalanga would need program management at the stage and development planners. And Eastern Cape program management, KZN program management engineering and planning. Our delivery program for this year. We have a total of 338 projects that have been implemented in municipalities within mining towns. Of that, we have 187 sites, 265 units that were completed from 2014-15 financial year until the period ending 31st March this year, at a total expenditure of 4 billion. For the current financial year, we approximate about 899 million that has been reimbursed in the different provinces for informal settlement upgrading in mining towns. And to date, a total of 1,594 sites and 579 units have been delivered in the mining towns. At a total expenditure of about 1.2 billion. So in accordance with DORA, the HSDG makes provision to utilize 2% of allocations to unlock bulk infrastructure challenges across these projects. But we also require funding, as we said also in the catalytic projects from water, for instance, and other streams to be made available. So there's a total then of 356 informal settlements in such towns, and that's the breakdown per province. Most of it is in Gauteng with 116, followed by Mpumalanga with 97. And we can then give a progress in terms of the transformation plans. Remember the first point in the gaps that we talked about in the problem statement was that there was no strategy and there were no plans. We have done transformation plans and completed for six in Limpopo, seven in Mpumalanga, and nine in Gauteng. We've just added Mukaka and Joe Murolong there in the Free State as well. The diagnostic plans, we indicate what's been completed and what's still to be completed and at what stage, what year of will be completed. And we summarize the interventions. For instance, in Tetakgomo, we'll only be completing by the end of this financial year. But it's mainly a rural depressed area and we need to consolidate one central focus area for development, including private sector development. And that slide is there in front of you, we can go through that. Then the next one, which I thought would show also where we have agreements with the different, or it's still coming. So then these are the land assembly points. Where we say RSA, that's public, that's the public sector. The rest would be private. And we show the extent of hectares that is involved. We have 1,218 hectares in total that we deal with. And then there's the breakdown of the land assembly by province. A total of 845 hectares in the northwest, and some of the outcomes that are emphasized by province on informal settlements upgrading, the breakdown again of those that are ready for packaging, 56, 118 ready for interim basic services, 58 informal settlements that would just require emergency basic services, but the staggering number of 124 where they would really demand or have to enforce some relocation, that the people are settled in areas that are not developable or are not suitable for development. So there's also an overlap with the 48 government-approved catalytic projects, and we indicate where the overlaps are. So if you look at the list of 48 catalytic projects, you look at the 22 distressed mining towns, we also tracked where there will be an overlap. And in Gauteng, there's Syferfontein, which is also a mining town. In Limpopo, Lephalale, as the DG spoke about, including Marapong, if you look at the CRUs in Marapong there. Lephalale is already a catalytic project. Clarinet, which is the one catalytic project that we're dealing with in Limpopo, is also a mining town. Matlosana, we spoke about, and Bokamoso in Rustenburg are also on the catalytic projects list. And Portsmansberg in the Northern Cape is an overlap. And then we indicate then those municipalities, the number of municipalities where there's also an overlap between NASP and the Kazakh projects. There's three in Gauteng, two in the Free State, four in Limpopo. We give the exact number of settlements and the exact number of households that the benefiting, and give a sense of what sort of categorization from rapid assessments or social facilitation or technical upgrading that might be required. At the bottom there, then we give some more definition for your understanding of what we mean by rapid assessment, what we mean by social facilitation, what we mean by technical upgrading, and what we mean by resettlement strategy or resettlement plans, as indicated in the table above. Then we look at the infrastructure, where the requirements are, in terms of our outcome number three. Lephalale requires bulk connectors. There are 806 mixed units in Dubatsi, 500 units required in Lephalale, and 652 units in Mamojela Park. And there are proposed detailed planning requirements also, and we break them down as to at what municipality or in what areas that detailed planning is required, and for how many units. And that's broken down for you. 500 in Skirvlek, and then in Elias Mutualedi, 350, and Marapo, planning for 300 units in the Lephalale required. Then we give some detail again of outcome three in terms of infrastructure and capacity support in the Popo. Then delivery outcome number four is about project planning and implementation. We give some detail about the Northwest in Sanwe Village and Bokfontein, and what the status of the project are and the challenges, what the challenges are in those areas. Marikana, I think the same, that what's the status, 900 units have been built, and we have engaged the municipality in planning, and enumeration is underway for further work. But there's been delays in donations to integrate the current development with their land between ASLA properties. I think we can be able to come back and give a progress report, I think, specifically for the learning work and the engagement once some of the agreements have been signed. But in terms of strategy going forward, I think we're at an advanced stage where there could be some agreements with learning, Rustenburg, Bujanana, and Madibeng. Bulk infrastructure assessments done or required in still in Marikana. And for Kamoso in Rustenburg, you need township establishment processes to be concluded and to lead to the construction of top structures and services. And we intending to look at the 1,609 units and 1,700 sites in the Kamoso. But we're busy with project structuring and financial modeling, dealing with that. Matosana, again under DWR 4, which looks at planning and implementation. The township establishment has been completed. The readiness matrix for Matosana is completed. And the site and service for 130 sites that has been serviced for Matosana. But there's further funding modeling that is required. Matosana, ultimately, as a catalytic project, we're looking at an 8 billion. Project there, but most of it would require, it's not a USDG city, it's a mixed city, so most of it will also compel us to go out and seek capital, private capital with other partners. Outcome five on labor saving areas, again, I spoke a bit about some trends and analysis work that needs to be done there. But looking at the KZN labor sending areas, that needs finalization, and we need a strategy to conclude it by the end of this financial year. Eastern Cape, the same, that we need to have a strategy developed and completed by the end of this financial year. Then there are partnerships and and intergovernmental relations issues. We are in at various levels of negotiation with a number of partners, especially the mining houses, where you don't just get into an agreement with them, but it has to be behind a development strategy. What's the strategy? Spend some time, agree on the strategy, and then agree on how the projects will be scoped, how the projects will be identified, and then develop the agreements to be entered into. In doing that, upfront, we enter into non-disclosure agreements. We have eight that have been finalized and eight non-disclosure agreements that have been completed and one outstanding at the moment. MOUs, four have been finalized and five are still being processed. And development agreements, we have one partnership agreement that has been drafted. And the parties still need to meet and all the relevant agreements, I mean partners, approved signatures or signatories are still being consulted. That's just to give you a sense of where we are. The disclosure agreement and where the MOUs are either drafted, where it's red, it's not even started, where it's green, it's signed, and where it's yellow, at least we have drafts. So going forward then some conclusions that we plan that some regional issues need to be resolved across the six delivery outputs that we spoke about going forward. We need to ensure that our reporting mechanisms and interventions are implemented over the medium term, that all intergovernmental relations agreements, vertically and horizontally, with provinces and municipalities are concluded, that we know that there's work underway to finalize all these IGR and the implementation protocols, and that the area-based strategies and spatial plans have to be completed by the end of this year. We have presented the long-term strategy that's gone through at least the ADA board has now been presented. I think there was an engagement with the DDG, the Shabani, and submissions, proper submissions, I think would go through the normal channel within the department to an extent that the logging strategy is approved. But in the meantime, we will be continuing to engage at an IP level to deal with management issues as we continue. And we're finalizing the holding strategy for the mines in the West Rand, especially as we speak. That's the presentation, Chair.
Thank you very much, maybe I must allow the department to come in before questions. To do some addition, taking into account the issue that when the mining town was presented to this committee in 2015, there's little that has changed in this presentation. So I just wanted to, for instance, the issue of the strategies that are still being done for Gauteng. So I just thought, let me allow you to come in before we ask questions. I'm a bit apprehensive about allowing the questions before we do the additions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I think it's important, Chair, to first acknowledge that there is an IMC on mining towns, and that the committee that provides guidance on the work that we're doing in the mining towns. We have been working for some time now in a vacuum without a strategy. In the last IMC, we presented the draft strategy for the mining towns. And the reason why that strategy is important is because, Chair, you are aware that in the past we had different approaches in the mining towns, and we stressed the point that the responsibility for building houses in the mining town is the responsibility of mining houses, the mining companies themselves. Government is not in the business of subsidizing the mining companies. We acknowledge that perhaps in Lonmin there was some expediency of some sort, because what Lonmin did, they gave us a land, a piece of land which is valued at 10 million rands. And we built houses to the tune of about 290 million rands for the mine workers. But also, we realized that if we continue to provide BLG units in the mining town, what we are doing is what I call a hit and a miss kind of a strategy, because none of the mine workers will qualify for the BNG units. Mm-hmm. There are quite a number of BNG units that are running, or BNG projects that are running in most mining towns, but those BNG projects will not benefit the mine workers. They will benefit the community in those mining towns, but not the mine workers. So the approach had to change. And after we went to Australia, visited Australia to look at how they deal with mine worker housing there, we realized that we have to change the approach. I would recommend, Chair, that we present that strategy here at any time. It's ready. We do have a draft which is likely to be approved before the end of this financial year. But we would want to present it here. It was well received by the IMC on mining towns. The IMC is chaired by the Minister and President, Mr. Khadim. And today we're discussing it with the DMR officials, because it has to be supported by DMR. There were instances, especially if you look at Marikana, where the DMR officials were not very happy with us in human settlements, because the 200 plus minus 200 units, social housing units, that we developed in Marikana were seen by DMR officials as a bailout strategy by the department for Lonmin. So we've received a lot of criticism from DMR for building units, highly subsidized units, for mine workers in the mining companies, which is why we changed the approach. The approach that we're taking going forward, you'll see it in the strategy, is that government will continue to provide support, whether it's subsidizing infrastructure, but the mining companies must take a lead in terms of accommodating mine workers. That's the approach that we are taking going forward. To remember, in the SMPs that the mining companies are signing the social labor plans, they commit and contract to provide accommodation not just for the mine workers, but also for the surrounding communities. So it can be that government has to take a lead in providing accommodation and for mine workers and the surrounding communities in areas where you have big mining houses or big mining companies. So the new approach that we have adopted, which we have presented to the IMC on mining towns, which will be approved by, I think it only requires the three ministers, the minister in the presidency, DMR, and our minister, to agree on that strategy. We have the view that that's what will inform our developments in the mining towns going forward. Currently, we were criticized for subsidizing heavily the mining companies. So we want to change that approach. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. I think that at least takes care of the fact that at some point then an IMS IFC approach what is going to be needed, that they come in front of the Colleagues so that the strategy is going to be presented. Everybody is part of that meeting. It's only been only in 2015, I remember, when the officials from the DMR have been in front of this committee, when that initial discussion took place. So I think that's something that we need to look at. Thank you very much. That's the presentation, Honourable Member. Any questions and clarities? Understanding that then we are going to be arranging for a follow-up meeting with the DMR and the presidency to come and present the strategy very soon. But questions and clarities are allowed. Let me start with Honourable Gatimeng, followed by Honourable Baha, followed by Honourable Wolnarat, followed by Honourable Soli, and then Honourable Soli Makis. Okay. Honourable Khwarai. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first start by appreciating the presentation that was made to us. I will be having one question in terms of the on the mining towns, on the project that were blocked. How does the NDA plan to deal with that, those circumstances? Thank you very much.
You mean HDA, not NDA. I know you're serving in many committees, so I just wanted to make sure that you are a human settlement.
No,
I'm not. Chairperson, I'm not sure whether it might not be a question, but more of a comment as well. But you see, the experience that we got when we did oversight, specifically in provinces where there are these mining houses, is that there's no consistency in how this matter is handled. And I think that probably with the strategy that DG is alluding to, maybe it will then provide a blueprint or some solid way of dealing with this matter. Because, Chairperson, I'm of the view that it can be for the government to provide housing for mine workers when their employer can afford to provide. But also, I get the sense that mining houses do offer to do part, and government must then do the rest. And I'm also of the view that I don't think it should be. They must provide, in fact, they must submit what their plan is to provide accommodation for their employees. Because one of the challenges that we have in dealing with the informal settlements, we've seen the appalling conditions in these mining towns, where people are living in shacks with no basic services. And for me, I think that it can be the responsibility of the government to provide that whilst they are selling their energy, their power for the good of the mining town. So I'm saying that for me, I think it's important that there be consistency in how this is handled across the country. Because it's like, you know, in certain areas where others can negotiate better, they'll get a better package. And where there's none, they will get whatever is offered. And I don't think that should be the case. And I think that probably the strategy that UDG is alluding to will then assist in having different strokes for different folks. If this is what is required to be done or offered by a mining house, that should be the case across the board. and therefore if there's any engagement, it should be on the basis of those who cannot afford, for whatever reason that there will be, where you deal with exceptional cases and stuff, but at least be a standard that is followed across the board. So I'm saying, okay, for me, it's not a question, but it's more a comment that says this would then ease the pressure on government to provide, where the private sector should also play a role because of the profits that they make out of the standard as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me take this opportunity as well to welcome the presentation. And a little bit disadvantaged because I did not go with you on your oversight and the other meeting that might have preceded this one. However, I was going to raise something that has been raised by both the DG and the CEO with regard to coordination. Because in all the mining towns across the country, we are actually chasing shadows. And the long and short of it is that the mining houses are taking advantage of our legislation that says the government must provide water, infrastructure, living conditions, and so forth. They are taking advantage of the part that says if somebody comes and settles, because most, if not all, informal settlements, as a result of people who have come to work and illegally occupying some land that either belongs to council or to traditional leadership, on which the mines are most probably leasing. Now, the easiest way for the mines to get out of that is to give you a piece of land which they will evaluate, but which is not actually the problem, because the valuation would be 8 million, but putting in bulk would be 58 million. And when they do their SLPs, that 8 million or the piece of land will be highlighted as a big contribution towards that problem. And the lack of coordination from the part of the department, the municipality, and the mine results in the mine washing its hands and says, we have contributed. Now, the problem that we have at Marikana will not go away, because when you get to at that point where people must get into the houses, the mine people are saying, no, we cannot leave people to get in the houses that were built for us because we don't really qualify for them as parents. So the question of the interministerial program that is going to be unfolded, which is going to be presented at first stage, would go a long way in saying who takes a lead. Somewhere in the document it says the municipalities are appointing consultants. ADA is also supposed to be appointing some people to do the same work. And when you get there, you find that something that could have been done in 3 months takes from 2015 to 2017 just to be finalized, because there are contractual obligations. So I'm looking forward, Chapter 77, or the committee again, to make some follow-ups in terms of how do we coordinate that part. Especially the role players and the stakeholders. So it's not necessarily a question. It's to highlight what the problem is and how it is shifting from time to time. And we'll be sitting maybe a year, and if other people are going to have going back, other years sitting with the same problem. And the last part is, when we come to budgetary processes, I'm not yet clear who must. In terms of dollar, you know what is going to come out of the finances, but who must do what financially in terms of the settlements, the special framework that we need to establish.
Thank you so much, Honorable Bormann. that maiden speech was well received. Honorable Malans.
Chair, the two colleagues have eloquently shared what I was going to share with the committee, so I'm covered.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malans. You are covered by Honorable Volmar.
Thank you, Chair. Really, it's the same from me, but my real concern and my question is that the understanding of these MOUs and what entails in an MOU. I'm sure the questions or the comment from my colleagues based on that. Because minds I'm sure minds are now hanging themselves on these MOUs. That's why they just say, give me the hands. Other things be done there. But unless we can understand what this entails in these MOUs. Or if there will be another MOUs, we must actually know exactly what is that is needed for that MOU. So that this man will not get out of free. Because really they don't deliver anything for all people. And they often get a lot of money from this country, and our people are doing that particular job. And but they don't deliver, they don't assist our people at all. Last year, on this one of the finalization of the diagnostic plans, I see here they have said the whole much is incomplete. But the one of Mukaka, I'm from Mukaka, it's my town and my area, so I'm passionate about it. That's all I want to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think the input from the members makes it clear that the presentation there of that strategy is of urgent, because it will deal with many issues that have been raised. But I think also, DG, on a lighter note, I want to congratulate both the HDA and the department to have included Postman's Bank in these mining towns, because the first time you came, we were hammering you because Northern Cape was not part. And we kept on saying, even if now they are not active in the mining towns, but at some point they carried the country. So I just want to appreciate the fact that at least Postman's Bank now is part of this mining town. It's really appreciated. Otherwise, I think the whole issue of the customization approach on these partnerships with the mining towns and these MOUs that members are talking about will be able to be dealt with in that strategy. Because the real and the coordination thereof, because the reality of the situation is that in all the oversights that we visited, it has become a big problem. You go to Mpumalanga and you hear a municipality saying they've come into a partnership with this mining house, and you go to another province and the approach is different. And at some point, therefore, we need to have a uniform approach on how we deal with these things. So I think, therefore, the bigger debate and discussion will take place when that strategy gets better. And I think what we will do amongst ourselves and the support team is to look at the date in the foreseeable future that strategy must come and be presented as soon as possible, so that then we move forward. Thank you very much. I think then that then takes us to the third presentation. Understanding that this presentation, they interlink. You can't talk about mining towns without talking about informal settlements. You can't talk about informal settlements without talking about catalytic projects. So they speak to each other. And I hope members will appreciate that. Can we then get that presentation on the updated upgrading of the informal settlements? We already know that from the previous presentation, HDA has already highlighted the fact that the NAF plans are not reflected in provincial business plans. Already, there's a red flag that has been put that most of the time the NAF plans are not reflected in the presentation. Over to you. Who's doing the presentation? Okay. Okay, do you want to...
Madam Chair, thank you very much. And good morning, honourable members as well. There we have it on the screen. Madam Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. I've been requested to do the presentation on the progress with regard to informal settlement upgrading. You would have noticed that the CEO of the HDA has made mention of a lot of work that they have been doing, particularly in the mining towns, on informal settlement upgrading, as well as in certain catalytic projects. So we will find certain overlaps in our presentations, but I can confirm that the figures that I will be talking to in my presentation, the HDA figures are actually included in there, because the NUS program that I'm going to refer to is in fact managed by the department in collaboration with the HDA and a few other partners. Madam Chair, just a quick outline of the presentation. There are a number of slides and issues that I'm sure honourable members have seen before, but I thought for the sake of completeness I would include those, and that might be of benefit to some of your new members. So I will by and large give you a sort of a national picture of where we are in informal settlements, what the NUS program has done, what it's intended to do, and then I will go down into our delivery figures thus far, as far as informal settlement upgrading is concerned. And then you will notice as part of the presentation I've also added an annex here, which I will talk to a little bit later, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is what the picture looked like in 2011 with the last official census. And you can actually see the concentration of informal settlements, those pink dots, Gauteng, Itikwini, two spots in the Eastern Cape. Cape Town, Free State stands out quite considerably, and then also to an extent Mpumalanga. Number of households currently estimated in informal settlements, around about 1.2 million. The figures have differed over years. The estimate that you see there of almost 1.3 million, we believe it's come down, but we don't have any firm evidence for that. Madam Chair, this gives you a picture of the provincial status of the number of informal settled households, or households in informal settlements. The red is the 2011 census, the yellow the 2001 census, and the blue the 1996 census. What is interesting from this picture, Madam Chair, is the top three provinces, Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Northwest, their 2011 figures are higher than the 2001 figure. All the other six provinces' figures have reduced between 2001 and 2011, and we are anxiously waiting for the next census to see what the picture would be like after the next census. Madam Chair, there was an assessment done on the UISP, the Upgrading of Informal Settlement Program. As you're aware, in 1994 there were an estimated 300 informal settlements across South Africa. Currently they are in the region of 2,700, and this figure isn't coming down too much. One of our problems that we are currently experiencing is that there's very little capacity to actually implement informal settlement upgrading. People find it much easier to do a greenfields development While informal settlement upgrading is somewhat more expensive, it's a much slower process. Small informal settlements can take you 7, 8 years, 9, 10 years to complete, while a new greenfields project would take you in the region of 2 to 3 years. So we have our challenges. Another very important aspect is the fact that thus far we have found that there's very little community participation in informal settlement upgrading. We see that now as a requirement, and we do not fund the development of any informal settlement upgrading plans without having ensured that there is community participation and not only community consultation. We want the communities to be part of these, to also then ensure that attention is given to the development of livelihood strategies within these informal settlements. Madam Chair, going back 17 years, our target between 2010 and 2014 was to deliver 400 services and tenure to 400,000 households residing in informal settlements. We achieved that target through HSDG and USDG funding, and we achieved almost 450,000 of these, let's call them units, but more often than not, these were service stands. Our target, MTSF target for 2014-2019, is that we should provide interim or basic services to at least 750,000 households currently residing in informal settlements. As far as the achievement of that target is concerned, I will come back to you to that figure in one of my last slides. Madam Chair, I think this is information that the committee is quite aware of. When informal settlement upgrading was identified by government as one of the priorities within the context of human settlement development, we established the National Upgrading Support Program within the department, firstly to promote the concept of incremental upgrading as we find it in Chapter 13 of the Code. But it's also to assist provinces and municipalities in the chase of the MTSF target of the 750,000 households to be serviced over the five-year period. We also would like to promote a programmatic approach in terms of informal settlement upgrading. And then lastly, Madam Chair, it's been clear over the last number of years that the capacity, particularly within certain municipalities, to undertake in-situ informal settlement upgrading remains a challenge for government. It's quite easy for project and program managers to manage a new housing project going through 201 steps without too many challenges. Informal settlement upgrading in situ is a totally different approach to upgrading, and we therefore have taken on the job of strengthening the capacity of government in order to promote the concept of in situ informal settlement upgrading. What does NUSP do? We provide technical support, particularly to municipalities, in certain cases to provinces where provinces act as developers, but it's by and large the technical capacity that we offer to municipalities. We have developed a very extensive capacity building program, which we will be rolling out within the next few months, where we will hopefully capacitate and provide practitioners and municipal officials with the knowledge and the know-how on how to undertake informal settlement upgrading. Madam Chair, we also have a knowledge services facility. We've established a website where all our documents, updates, etc., can be found. The name of the website is www.upgradingsupport.org. And over the past number of years, in collaboration with the HDA, we, for instance, developed upgrading tools. And these are all made available to practitioners to use in their upgrading exercises. As indicated by the CEO, we, due to the mandate that was given to HDA in terms of the planning of mining towns, there was a deliberate decision that the part of NUSP, the NUSP activities, in other words, the technical support that is to be provided, would then be provided by the HDA within the mining towns in order to ensure that there's a comprehensive, holistic planning exercise within the mining town as part of the recovery plans that they develop, and therefore they then included the informal settlements under the auspices of the NUSP program, and therefore the attention that they gave to the 356 or 358 informal settlements in the mining towns. In terms of collaboration, we've also now included the city support program, which is being run under the auspices of the National Treasury, with its main focus to provide support to the 8 metros. We've included the city support program as part of NUSP, and they operate under the auspices of NUSP, and also then make use of the material that we've been developing, the implementation tools, etc., etc. Madam Chair, just a very quick slide. Mr. Molloy has referred to feasibility studies. This is the categorization that we do in terms of our feasibility studies, a category A, B1, B2, and C. I'm not going to dwell on this slide. Members can read through these definitions. These feasibility studies lead us to the development of upgrading plans. So we provide technical support to a municipality, we do the feasibility study for them, and then we would provide technical support to those municipalities to develop specific upgrading plans for specific settlements. We've been involved in 92 municipalities thus far. We have done in excess of 1,200 feasibility studies, and we have developed in excess of 850 upgrading plans up to now. For this year, Madam Chair, there are 230 upgrading plans currently being developed, and another 350 feasibility studies would be completed by March 2018. I will come back to this part in red, but there's up to now been very little evidence of these plans that we develop or developed through the NUS program, that these find themselves in the annual provincial business plans of the provinces. So we develop these plans, and provinces do not include them in their business plans for funding. Madam Chair, we have a fairly large challenge around information on informal settlements. Cabinet has requested us to do a full investigation in terms of what is happening in South Africa in relation to informal settlements. There was a dedicated technical MINMAC approximately a year ago, and as part of our summit exercise a few weeks ago, we also had a pre-summit workshop on informal settlements where particular decisions were taken inter alia that each and every province would establish an informal settlement coordinating committee which will include all its municipalities in order to reach agreement on a pipeline of projects to be funded within each province, obviously through the HSDG, but that the coordinating committee should also ensure alignment of HSDG and USDG funding within the metros to determine how would an informal settlement be developed, what would be paid through the USDG and what would be paid through the HSDG. Madam Chair, thus far we've received information on a number of provinces and a number of metros. We have fairly good information thus far on 1,400 informal settlements. We know of these informal settlements exactly which settlement has access to which types of services. Is it water? Do they have sanitation? What's the level of the service, etc.? And we have also conducted studies that we completed last week in Mpumalanga and Gauteng and Northwest. I'm waiting for that information. The KZN exercise is ongoing. It's a fairly difficult province in terms of the identification of informal settlements. But we hope that within the next 3 or 4 months we would have all this information through which we would be able to provide cabinet with a picture of informal settlements across South Africa and what access to services the inhabitants of these settlements have currently. Madam Chair, I referred earlier to our MTSF target, the 750,000 households. You'll see this table refers to 30th of June 2017. We haven't had received the figures from provinces for this last quarter as yet, particularly the USDG metros. They normally provide us with their information by the end of October, so we are still waiting the final information. But according to this, Madam Chair, through the HSDG and through the USDG, this is what's been delivered, the 290,000 units in relation to informal settlement upgrading. The picture doesn't look too good. You'll see there are very few, in the second last column, very few green blocks. That is where provinces and or metros have performed fairly well. The red ones, quite clearly, there's a considerable amount of underperformance vis-a-vis the MTSF target, as well as the particular annual targets which are reflected in this table. So what this table really says, Madam Chair, is that we've delivered close to 291,000 stands, service stands, in two households residing in informal settlements. But in terms of our target, we've got a long way to go. And that's almost 460,000. Madam Chair, then we've done some additional work, and the next slide I'm going to show you, I would request you to take note of. Take it with a pinch of salt, as it were, at this stage. But this is the figure that we have currently have of shared services that are being provided to informal settlements in our metros. Now the total figure that you see there is also approximately 291,000. Now the provision of these shared services are being regarded as part of our target, but all the red figures that you see there in this table, we have questions around those. I thought I would provide you with this picture. But we are not convinced as yet that particularly the red figures are quite correct. But this in itself poses a challenge, and that is in relation to our reporting, Madam Chair, and the way in which not only our metros and provinces report to us, but very often your secondary towns and cities, which do not receive a USDG allocation, we don't necessarily get information from those municipalities where they provide services to communities through their own funding, not using HSDG, but many of them use their own municipal income and grants, such as MIG, to provide services to communities. And those figures are not included here. We are busy with a major exercise currently in order to get access to those figures. Madam Chair, we have a number of challenges as far as the informal settlement upgrading program is concerned. As reflected in the last two slides, whether we're going to achieve our MTSF target of 750,000, it's an open question at this stage. We don't necessarily see much of a reduction in the number of informal settlements in the country. Although in the first 5 years, 2010 to 2014, we delivered 450,000 stands. Thus far, we've delivered 290,000 stands. But the number of informal settlements itself still remains constant. We're not getting rid of the informal settlements. Informal settlement households are either being provided with a house and services in a greenfields development, but immediately someone else moves in to the previous shack or the informal settlement, and the land isn't secured, as it were, against re-invasion. As I indicated before, Madam Chair, we are now in the process of putting plans in place to ensure that the finances that we make available for the development of informal settlement upgrading plans are in fact reflected in the provincial business plans, as well as the built environment performance plans of the metros, to ensure that the capital funding becomes available for the upgrading of these informal settlements. I think particularly the DG is very sensitive about our fourth bullet there, that we still find it very difficult to convince provinces and municipalities to build a 3, 4, 5 year pipeline of projects in order to secure funding, number one, but also to ensure that development and your pre-development activities can take place in time in order for your capital expenditure to be expended as soon as the money becomes available. Madam Chair, lastly, I think we need to consolidate our capacity support to functionaries, to officials, but also to establish the principle with particularly municipal councillors for them to take informal settlement upgrading seriously and to promote the principle of informal settlement upgrading in their various municipalities. Madam Chair, before I close off, I've attached an annexure. Just, and these are just extracts from the work that NUSP is doing in terms of the feasibility studies and the plans that we produce. This is once again the definitions in relation to the categories of informal settlements. Here's an example of the proposed interventions that this plan would propose in terms of water, sewer, roads, electricity, etc. This is the costing of a plan. These we all provide to the municipality, which they can use as a planning instrument. And then finally, we provide them with an upgrading plan, which they then can submit to a province to be considered by the MEC for funding through the HSDG. In certain cases, at the request of communities, we also provide them with plans of housing typologies, which they can then also use when this development takes place. Madam Chair, thank you very much. That would conclude my presentation. Not sure whether the DG or anybody else would like to add, or even Mr.
Don't do that. I'm chairman. Oh, yours is just present. So don't invite people in my meeting to present. Thank you so much for that presentation. That's the presentation on informal settlements. But then, maybe the question I must ask before I open up for questions is directly to the department and to say, are you happy with this with this program? And this program. I think that's my direct question before I open up for questions. Did you?
Sure. There's another question that I wanted to answer, Chair, but let me start with your question. We're not happy with progress in this area. One of the reasons why the NAS program was introduced was to deal specifically with the challenges that my colleague has listed. The NAS, as an operational grant, was meant to buy the capacity that we are raising as a challenge now. It was meant to support the capital programs in provinces and in municipalities. Remember, NASP is an operational support grant. So all of the issues that we're raising here as challenges are things that the NASP program was initiated to deal with. We haven't done well. I must admit upfront that we didn't perform well to deal with those challenges. Number three, Chair, we've always said in this committee, even in cabinet as well, when we present, that there are few informal settlements that are not being serviced. The main issue is the level of service, is the degree of the service. In some informal settlements, you will notice that there is a water standpipe servicing a number of households. And that water standpipe, if it's not maintained properly, it will break down because the capacity that it is servicing is very big. In some instances, you'll find that there is a sanitation point which is servicing 30 dwellings or 30 households. And if that sanitation point is not maintained properly, it will not last for too long. Where we want to be, Chair, is to create a 1:1 kind of a ratio. In other words, you have one sanitation point servicing one household. The RDP standard is 1:5, that you must have one sanitation point servicing five households. Now, in all of our informal settlements, because we can tell you that in all the metros, we know all the informal settlements, the metros have kept the data on the level of service. The figures that my colleague wants to disown are figures that are coming from the metros. All these figures in that slide 15, are figures that were submitted by the metros themselves, because it became very clear that we're not quantifying the shared services properly. Because in any case, the target that we've set for ourselves is a shared services target, because we said we will provide a basket of services to informal settlement households. That 750,000 households, the target is for stage two, what we call the UISP stage two target, which is the provision of water, sanitation, electricity, and other services. And all of those are shared services. In most cases, they are shared services because they are provided to informal settlements that are less formal. know, you've got degrees of informal settlements. We have those informal settlements which have been formalized, but you still have sheikhs. Then you have those informal settlements where there's no formality. In the Western Cape, they call them imbat, which literally translated in English means the migrants. because there are no formalized streets, there are no formalized dwellings. I'll give you one example, Chair, just to demonstrate the point. In Tswane East, there's an informal settlement called Itere Lane. And that informal settlement, the Tswane municipality, as we speak, they're busy with the marking of the shacks, because the starting point is to count the dwellings. And we have to provide the NASP budget for all of that to happen. They count the dwellings. How many dwellings do we have in this informal settlement? If we are going to upgrade it and formalize it, where are we going to move the people and how do we move them? But the starting point is to count the dwellings. And secondly, before you formalize it, you provide water standpipes. You provide, in some cases, I've seen it in Uru, chemical toilets. And all of those are funded from the USDG budget. And all what NASP was intended to do is to make sure that we create a pipeline of projects that will help us to upgrade the informal settlement. That's why we have the three categories. But the story, to cut a long story short, Chair, our point is that the majority of informal settlements are being serviced, but the main issue is the level of service, the degree of service in those informal settlements. And that is why the figures, these figures on slide 15, these are figures that are additional to the 290 that we have reported. When we said to Cabinet and to our minister that we need to be given a little bit of time to verify these figures, because the auditors are going to audit them, and we wouldn't want to submit something that has not been audited to you or to Cabinet. So that's why we are holding them back. But these are figures that are coming from municipalities. We can break them further, Chair. If you take Buffalo City, you have these figures. We can break those numbers further by settlement. Remember now, we're only reporting by municipality. We can tell you the level of service in an informal settlement in a metropolitan municipality, so that at the end of the day, the AG can go and verify whether these services that we're talking about are there, and whether the households that we're counting in that informal settlement is there, because we have to verify the figures. So that's why my colleague is putting a disclaimer on that slide number 15. We are simply asking you to give us a little bit of time to verify those figures. And once they are verified, they will be added to the 290 figure that we have reported on. Thank you very much, Chair.
How much time before I open the question?
We've been doing this exercise since June. I think we're likely to conclude on it the latest by the end of the third quarter. We ask Cabinet to give us up until the end of the financial year. But we are of the view that by January, we should be having these figures verified. Most metros are confident about the figures. It's just ourselves who are a little bit cautious, because we don't want this seem to be misleading the Auditor General. So I would say January is a realistic target date.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping that honorable members are noting that, so that when they come back to report at the end of the fourth quarter, you remember this commitment. Nonetheless, I'm opening for questions and clarifications. I know, honorable colleague, the commitment was not trying to take the wind out of you. But let's hear comments and questions. yes.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'll defer everything to once the numbers are verified. But I just have one question with regards to the HSF status. I mean, given the performance now and the numbers now as we see them, and there seem to be no question whatsoever about the veracity of the numbers on this slide. As the department, what is your sense of delivery based on the current performance, bearing in mind, you know, the targets that you have and the resources that you have, so that, you know, whenever the time comes to look at the end of, you know, the MSTEP period and the target, we are mindful that we anticipated that the challenges could perhaps throw us back from meeting that target, so that even now we can have a very realistic sense that given this level of delivery, yes, we are confident that we'll be able to meet this and even exceed it because we are performing well. Or be more blunt about, you know, what's happening here, because often the trick is when we have to engage figures that are not as present as, you know, the day on which we are dealing with this, we are often at a disadvantage, because these figures, you know, as you indicated in the presentation, include up to June, you know. In a quarter, a lot can happen. Sometimes too little can happen in a quarter, you know. That is the flip side of the other side. The optimists say, you know, in the last quarter, that's where delivery gets jacked up. You know, when you look at that in terms of strictly financial management systems, when the performance peaks in the last quarter, it also raises questions about, you know, creative financial spending simply to tick boxes. But I want to get a sense, based on, you know, we're not very far off from the completion of the MSTEP period, and the performance, you know, I've got my own views about the performance and whether we'll be able to reach the target or not. But I just want to get that sense from you. How confident are you that the performance will be closer to that target or even exceed it? And, you know, given all that we know now about, you know, the existing challenges that you have encountered, what's happening to try and, you know, mitigate those challenges so that the performance is consistent with the target and the resources that are attributed to it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Soli. You are not going to raise your hand, Honorable Bass, just because Honorable Soli has just spoken, because I asked for hands and you did not have your hand up. You did not have your hand up.
I just want to raise probably an unfair question, but I think it's important that I raise it. The issue of informal settlement seems to be a moving target, because on a daily basis there are invasions, there are new establishments that are set up on a daily basis. And in a way, whatever attempts the department does in trying to deal with informal settlements, it means we'll never get there. Now, what I want to check, Chairperson, is that are there any attempts, whether in partnership with other government departments, that are made to kind of deal with land invasion that result into mushrooming of informal settlements, in order at least to kind of arrest the situation where it is, so that as we try to deal with it, at least we are able to minimize more establishments of this kind. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bassa. I think one of the big concerns about this program is the fact that fairly or unfairly, the department is being judged on it. Because you see, when people see informal settlements all over, then they say the department is not delivering. There are so many informal settlements there. Where is the department finishing this informal settlement? And where are they building houses without even you know, interrogating the whole program. So it's a very sensitive area that we need to be able to understand and be able to talk about it openly, particularly in relation to the issue of the immigration trends that are happening. But having said that, you know, I want a comfort that the department, HBA, and everybody else that deals with this program, do you have the comfort that there is proper coordination of what is happening? Because when the problem is being dealt with in different pockets, we need to have a comfort that the coordination is actually maximized and is doing well. I just want to have that sense. That says, are you comfortable with the fact that there's proper coordination of this program? And you see, my other area, which we always, you know, hamper the department on, is the fact that every time we look at the U.S. digital spending, there's always this sense of metros are not utilizing USDG enough. Even if you look at this at page 7 right now, the only metro there that is green is Echegwini. Everybody else is red. Now, there's always this sense that metros are not utilizing the USDG enough in terms of upgrading of informal settlements. And I just want to have a sense how the department is making sure that they assist metros, even the HDA for that matter, how do they assist metros to make sure that they actually utilize the grant optimally in terms of this upgrading of informal settlements? Because it's something that sometimes it's not the absence of funds. It's just how the coordination and how we utilize what we have. But probably we will have that discussion in detail when the department comes back next year to come and do the presentation. I also, I didn't know that there is provincial coordinating committees that have put in there to deal with this program. Because you see, I'm raising that question because when we go around doing oversight, nobody owns up to these programs to these challenges of this program. Nobody. So for me, even the province will say, we will hear from the national department on this program. That provincial coordinating committee that's supposed to deal with this program is nowhere to be found. It has not been there in Mpumalanga. We didn't see it.
Mm.
It never owned up. It has not been there in Northwest.
Mm.
We didn't see it. It never owned up. And bulk of the questions were around informal settlement. I'm just saying, sometimes we put structures on, but do they do what they are supposed to be doing? And do they understand what is it that they are supposed to be doing? So it's a very critical question that I think at some point we will need to interrogate. But I think my last comment is that, DG, when we do oversight as this portfolio committee, can we have somebody from NASP being part of the team? So that, because wherever you go, there's always challenges of informal settlement. So that we don't wait for responses when we meet with you 2 months down the line. We can have at least some of the things being dealt with on the spot. So I really want to appeal that we have somebody who is directly dealing with the NASP program to be part of the oversight. I've already raised the issue that HTA must be part of the oversight. They've tried in Northwest, but even though they were not there the whole 5 days, because bulk of the things that then we deal with, we can be able to deal them with them on the spot, so that the oversights that don't just become a tour, but they become a program that deals with resolving problems on the ground. So I just wanted to just raise those 2 points. Thank you so much. I don't know if there's any responses that you want, or you, if you can, and then the rest we will discuss it when you come back. You said after the third quarter, after January, end of the third quarter. Okay. But you can respond. Thank you so much.
The first question, Chair, is whether the target is achievable or not. I think it is, Chair. That target is achievable once we have agreed on the quantification of the households and the number of services that have been provided in informal settlements. If you look at that figure, if you add the figure that we are putting a disclaimer on at this stage, you already have plus minus 500,000 plus households affected. Once we've audited and verified that figure, you will be sitting at almost 70% of your five-year target. So I just thought that the target is achievable, but we need to be clear about the methodology of accounting for those targets, because that's the issue that we've been grappling with for some time. How do we know that the target is achieved? How do we know that the service is delivered? How many households are benefiting from that target? That's what we need to perfect so that it can be audited. Then, Chair, the performance of the USDG. You are spot on, Chair, when you say there is a positive correlation between poor performance on the USDG and the poor performance on this target. If you look at KZN, Echiquin in particular, the metro, this is one metro that has performed very well consistently for the last 5 years. They have never failed to miss their targets. And it's not an accident that they are green in terms of this informal settlements upgrading target. And they're also quantifying the targets very well, better than any other metro. They count those shared services properly, and they count one-to-one targets properly. Remember here, the target is about the provision of basic services to informal settlements. It's not so much about upgrading the informal settlements to stage 4 or stage 5, which is a house. This is about providing basic services, which is easily doable. It's easily achievable. And I think Echiquin Municipality has done a good job in terms of managing this particular target. You are aware that we've had some problems in Ekurhuleni, Cape Town, and these are the two metros that have failed to spend their allocation for the last 3 years. Except to say that Ekurhuleni did better this year, because they are under expenditure of about 20 million rands, and Cape Town underspent by about plus minus 100 million rands. Once the two metros start performing, and I'm sure that picture is going to change, because we have made it very clear in the Division of Revenue Act that we want 50% of the USDG to go to informal settlements. That's the target. And all the metros, they know that target. That if you have a budget of 1 billion rands, we want 50% of that to focus on informal settlements upgrading. But the upgrading is for the provision of basic services. Yes, it may be a moving target, but this is urbanization. We've taken a decision as a country a long time ago that we must embrace informality. It's not only unique to South Africa. I mean, in Brazil, they deal with favelas. They do the provision of basic services to favelas. Some cases, they even go overboard and provide cable cars in some informal settlements so that people are able to take their next cable car to the train station. So what we want to focus on is to make sure that the informal settlements are habitable, they are livable, and people can raise children in those informal settlements. That's why we prioritize the provision of basic services. But at the same time, Chair, it means in practical terms that the metros have to jack up forward plan so that we are not forever chasing our tail. We need to plan the informality. We need to plan the migration for the migration. And if you read the new urban agenda, the focus is about making sure that the metros are equipped to plan. And part of the introduction of the grant, the NASP grant, was to make sure that we assist the metros. I think that question, maybe we should take it as a recommendation. Is there a way that HDA and the National Department of Human Settlements can assist the metros to plan better for this target? Get some of the plans into the built environment performance plan. Because I think that's one area that has been frustrating us. We have appointed service providers. We get technical capacity in 91 municipalities. But what happens in the municipality is that these projects that we've packaged and these plans that we've packaged do not end up in the IDPs of the metros. And if it's not in the IDP, it's not going to be prioritized. So perfecting the pipelining of the upgrading of informal settlements is what we are beginning to focus on. We started in Kapteng already. The Shabana is providing leadership there to get the three metros to coordinate better with the province and with HDA so that we can package the upgrading plans. I think most of your questions or comments will be answered when we get here in January next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and don't think we will forget.
No.
We won't.
No, but thank you very much. That takes us to the end of the presentation. The pre-presentation, very important and critical presentation, which then we will take up the further discussions around them. We will interact with both the departments and the HDA when we feel the need that they should come back, because we really feel that this is one entity that is very critical to the life of the department. But thank you very much both to the HDA officials and the department for gracing us with their presence when we request them to come. That takes us to the end of your participation in this meeting. The next two items don't really need you per se, because we are just adopting the minutes and the oversight report from Malak. If you want, you can slowly leave, but if you are going to make the noise, you can sit and not disturb us. That takes me to the minutes of the 17th of October, which took place at E305. If we can just make sure that of the 5th of September. In the last meeting, remember, they were not in the package. So they are being slipped into me in my hand to say, please, deal with those. The meeting that we that dealt with the first quarter report took place in Z475. Can we then get to the move of the minutes of the 5th of September? Honorable Korai?
I move
5th of September. Any seconder? Seconded by Honorable Ba. The second minutes are the minutes of the 17th of October, which is last week, where we were adopting the Triple R report and the Northwest Oversight report. Very short meeting. Can I get a mover? Moved by Honorable Katime, seconded by Honorable Shurai. Those were the two sets of minutes. Now,
The last part is the oversight report of Mpumalanga, which we gave it to you to look at it. We were in Mpumalanga from the 11th to the 15th of September, and we just want you to, we're hoping that you had looked at the report, because we gave it to you, it was with you the whole week. I know that some of you were very busy, but that report was in your hand for a week. Can we adopt honorable members to deal with the rest? Because otherwise, we're going to have work piling on us for nothing. Honorable Pap? Adopt and accept that. Seconded by? Seconded by? Honorable Sonia, we're not going to read them now, unfortunately. I know how you feel. But there's nothing major about it. Thank you. Seconded by Honorable Olai. That takes us to the end of this meeting. Women's Settlement Awards that are taking place on the 9th of November. Unfortunately, it's a first day, and when I looked at the program of Parliament, it looks like there will be voting taking place that day. So, there will be very few people that will be allowed to go. They are taking place in Galata Estate. So, I know that some parties are not going to allow their members just to leave Parliament. But I'm just letting you know that there is Human Settlement Award taking place on the 9th of November. So that when you see it on TV, you say, but how come I don't know when I'm serving in this program? It will be 8th. Thank you very much. That takes us to the end of this meeting. And thank you very much for always being here on time and participating in making this committee the best that it could be. If we could have awards for committees, I'm sure this one you will know. But thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I just put it there.